This is the second side of the interview with James Warren. Okay.
I think the biggest gripe that, you know, everybody had with John is that the place was, you know, neglected. Physical plant was neglected. The housekeeper was neglected.
I think the only thing that I can say about that, well, there's several things. One, we are educating other people's children. And the bulk of our undergraduates come from the island and Manhattan. And there is a difference in the background of students who are first generation college and sometimes only second generation Americans.
Yeah, probably true.
And then we had not only to educate them, but to civilize them at the same time.
Yeah.
Now, I would have preferred to go looking when I came. I would have preferred to go looking for a different dean of students. But I was supposed to be there for only a year, and I didn't feel that I could make
a lot of changes, right.
Make a lot of changes that way. I would have picked another type of individual. But then we wanted to get some instant ivy, I guess you'd call it. In other words, flowers and decor. We were keeping school in the middle of a construction
plant. In a mud field.
Yes.
I remember.
You remember. And I continually contrasted what we were doing with what was going on here in Albany, where the site, the construction site, was free of students.
Right.
And you're fortunate. So, I also felt that occasionally they would spend money for flowers, plantings, and so on, and they wouldn't give me a line with which I could go out and get an experienced horticulturist
to take care
of me. That's just one frustration that you run into. I wish we had enough money. I wish I had had enough money to do even a quarter of the active recruitment upstate that my own alma mater, which is Westland, has. As a public institution, we have to take people
That's
who
right.
come to us, but we are not prevented
from recruiting.
From recruiting.
That's right.
But we are because they won't staff it.
Yeah.
That's our problem.
This is true. And it was more true then than it is today. I think it's recognized a little bit more today. But in those days, it was saying, hey, they're flowing in.
Yes.
Huh?
Yeah.
You got to take care of them.
Right.
Now put like Albany, you're saying, hey, wait a second, we don't want them. They're not good enough. Huh? You couldn't say it down at Stony Brook because you'd have every politician on Long Island up in arms if you didn't take those people. Huh? No matter who they were, if they were passing grades. I think now they can be a lot more selective. But in the early days there, you didn't have a lot of choice.
Well, actually, the quality of our student body in those days, in terms of their standing in class and their native intelligence wasn't bad. They were not housebroken.
No, well, the same was true on the Buffalo campus. The campuses that got them right out of New York City suffered by it from that point of view.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
New Paltz, Buffalo, you people. Much more so, you know, well, Albany had some of them, and they had, but like our colleges of Oswego and Plattsburgh, they didn't have any of these problems because these were upstate kids. They were different
kind.
Background altogether.
Right.
And made all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
Of course, Old Westbury was a nightmare for a while.
Yes. And he went to Bryn Mawr. And
Harris Walker, oh, he was something. Because he was a brilliant guy. Wasn't he? He was the kid, he was only a kid. He founded this, what was it, the One World Organization or something?
I don't know. He was with...
he was with the Kennedy husband.
Yes.
What's her name?
Manassas?
No,
not Jackie.
No, not Ethel. Joan Kennedy? Oh. Began with an S, his name did.
Shriver?
Shriver. He was head of the Peace Corps, was Harris Wofford with him. Huh?
That's right. That's right.
But, you know, Harris Wofford let him paint the classrooms the colors they wanted. He did everything. Oh. I don't know how he made it. Is he still in Bryn Mawr?
Oh, no.
No. I don't know where he went after that. But when he was, as near as I know, when he was only a high school student, he organized this One World Organization or something. Mm-hmm. He had vision.
Yeah.
And he was a dreamer. And he probably would fit in somewhere as good, but he wasn't an administrator to be in a college. I think the person who got hurt worst in this whole Stony Brook situation was Alec Pound, and I think a lot of it was his fault, and a lot of it was the chairman of the council.
Really?
Jerry, what was his name?
Andy Anderson.
No, not Anderson. Anderson was sensible, no. It was,
chairman of the council.
Yeah, Jerry.
It wasn't Judge Sullivan.
No, Sullivan was before.
Yeah.
Who was it, Jerry Newman?
Could be, yes.
Yeah, Jerry Newman.
Yeah.
Because when John Toll left, the faculty did not want Alec Pond. The faculty did not. They conveyed that to us in no uncertain terms. The rest of the council, most of the council didn't want it. Anderson didn't. But the politicians on Long Island wanted Alec and Jerry Newman, and I knew that our board was not going to support Alec Pond for president. I mean, he was too close to John Toll, and you needed a new blood coming in there to be different. Now, the faculty committee came up with five names or so. And Alec Pond, they put Alec Pond on the list because they didn't want to insult him. But he'd be like number five. They told us this. The council, led by Jerry Newman, with the exception of Anderson, supported Jerry, and they insisted that they have Alec Pond. Well, we knew the faculty didn't want him, and our board felt that we'd better have him. So they sent Alec Pond's name up to be approved. The council did. Don Blinken was in Europe, and this was a week before, a week and a half before our regular meeting was called. And I called Jerry Newman, and I said, Jerry, I'd like to meet with you and your counsel in New York City, our New York City office. We got to talk about this appointment. So they came into New York City, and I said, look, I know Alec Pond, and I like Alec Pond, but the faculty don't want him as president of the college. Our board of trustees is not going to buy a president of the college. Now, don't send his name in. It's unfair to Alec Pond. We don't want to turn him down, but don't send his name in because he's not going to become president of Stony Brook. Well, we want him. I said, well, you know, if the faculty, we can't cross a faculty up. The faculty don't want a person that's the world's worst thing to force him on them. He's going to have banana peels under every step he walks. So we had a meeting at our college presidents in Cooperstown. And Alec Pond came to it. And Ernie and Don Blinken, myself, went with Alec and told Alec, you know, Alec, you know, your name was on that list, but the faculty are opposed. We think it's better for the college to have complete new blood in their administration. But we don't want to hurt you, so we'd like you to put your name back. Well, he says, I'll think about it. So we're having a meeting in New York City. And the day before, his name comes up. The council has recommended Alec Pond to be appointed. And they insisted that we interview him. We interviewed Alec. Our board did and discussed it back and forth. And a long interview with Alec. And then asked him to wait outside. And our board talked it over and said, you know, we just can't appoint this man. So Don Blinken went out and said, you know, and Jerry Newman came into New York with Alec. Prior to that, Jerry Newman and I were pretty, had good relationship, but after that I had no really use for the poor guy. But Don Blinken went out and said, Alec, withdraw your name now. We don't want to have to vote on this. It won't do you any good. You're not going to get elected. You're not going to get the job. But we don't want to be having on the record that the Board of Trustees turned you down. If we have to, we're going to vote against you. But we don't think it's good professionally for you. We think you're going to be a lot better off if you just say, I'm withdrawing my name. Jerry Newman stood there with Alec and said, don't you do it. Make them turn you down. And we voted to turn the guy down. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was unnecessary. Professionally, it could hurt him a lot more than it did. But I understand they've had some problems with Marburger as far as administration is concerned.
I'm too far away.
Well, I'm far away, right. But I know they sent administration down there to try to get the thing in shape financially and everything else.
Oh, really?
In the last 2 years or so. It's been since I've been on. I think they sent John Buck up now, who's head of the Research Foundation, to try to straighten it out.
Right. I think from what I can see, he's doing a good workmanlike administrative job.
John Marburger.
Yeah.
I don't know what the problem was because I always thought he was a great guy, and I thought, gee, he was an attractive guy, and he did great academically. Whether a man can be a great educator, he can attract great scholars and everything else, and yet not have the capability of getting those people under him to do what they should do. And I think that's what happened in that situation. They relaxed on collecting tuition and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so I understood that they did send John Buck off down there for 6 or 8 months to try to get things straightened around. And that, lots of times, is just getting the right person to work under a man like Marburger.
Right?
And sometimes a guy like Marburger comes in and he's got somebody in that office and he doesn't know how to get rid of him.
That's true.
Huh?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think, what do you see, or what did you envision Stony Brook's place in the entire university system to be?
Well, our vision, we always envision four university centers.
Right.
With four different missions. Now, we always looked upon Stony Brook to be the strength in science, technology, mathematics, engineering. So that was where we thought that Stony Brook's strength should be, and mission should be, in the sciences and so on. Albany is in the behavioral sciences, government, social welfare, social justice, education. Buffalo was in the professions. They had the law school, they had the pharmacy college, they had nursing, medicine. And that was a strength there. And Binghamton should be the strength in the arts. And that's the way originally that was Sam Gould's, and it was Sam Gould's idea and vision. This is the way he would like to see it going. I think Stony Brook has done that as far as I can see. I think they have I think they got a lot of strengths in the sciences. Now, I've been away for 5 years, so I don't know what's happened today. What'd you feel about it?
I think they are definitely stronger in the sciences than they are, and that includes medicine, of course, the health sciences, than they are in either the social sciences or the humanities. They have grouped the social science, social and behavioral sciences in a building so that they can talk to each other. The biological sciences, which are in a way a division of their own, have their own building. Chemistry is by itself, but it's close, reasonably close to mathematics and physics. The humanities are really the stepchildren, and I think it's partly because of the emphasis elsewhere, but also that you have in the top administration people whose experience and training is in disciplines that don't deal with people.
Yeah.
And consequently, they don't know really how the humanities are organized nationally. They don't know where the leadership is nationally. They know that very well in physics and chemistry and biology. They're part of the mainstream research of this country in those fields, but not for the humanities.
You know, I always had a theory that, and this is true not just at State University, but in the field of engineering and medicine, that we had developed a great, highly trained group of uneducated people. They are trained, doctors are trained, but how many of them really know about life? The social aspects of life. The same is true in engineers. They come in and tear a city down and have no idea about the people that live there. And you know, I think we divorced those humanities from this training.
Yeah.
And it's too bad.
Yeah.
But that's what happens. We ran into a similar problem in Westchester because we had the performing arts and the liberal arts. And, you know, they didn't talk to each other. It was the emphasis and the mission of Westchester was to be on the performing arts. But you can't neglect the other. And if you put the liberal arts man in charge, then the performing arts people think they are very neglected. They put the humanities man in charge.
Yeah.
The other way, or the performing arts person, then the humanities are being the guy. And I could suspect that this could happen to Stony Brook.
Well, the performing arts people finally got a performing arts center for the arts. A two-building affair where the actual performances take place, and another one where the studios, art studios, and music practice rooms and offices. That's fine. But the humanities philosophy is in old physics, religion, and comparative literature, old chemistry. The languages are in the library, and English is over in its own by itself.
Beth Moore and Johnny Toole were highly enthusiastic about developing religious program, comparative religious program in the university. And both of them were. I don't know how it has developed along. I mean,
it's gone downhill. The person who was heading what was then called the Center for Religious Studies.
Right.
Has left, and he is chairman of the Department of Religion at Boston University. He was number two in the competition for Dean of the Harvard Divinity School.
And we lost him.
We lost him, yeah. And he's written five books, well regarded both in religion and in philosophy.
Too bad.
Well, and I think we can, I don't know enough about why we lost him. He was a good friend of mine, and I was very sorry to see him go because he was a first-class individual. But I think the president is a physicist. The provost is a marine scientist. The dean of the graduate school was a biologist one time. I don't know what the present one is. That sort of thing.
Yeah, that becomes lopsided.
Yeah.
It's too bad because even though the mission, you know, as I say, was to be the emphasis on science, none of these institutions were, all of them were expected
to become
part of the comprehensive and have the humanities,
right.
Even though their emphasis was because they had more programs, more science programs at Binghamton, for instance,
yeah.
or Albany. But the emphasis should have been, you know, a comprehensive educational program. It's true in our two-year colleges. We always harped about the comprehensive program in the two-year colleges, that it was important to have the general education as well as the technical education of a two-year college. But those things, they get slipped by, and all of a sudden you find that the program has gone downhill, and it's a tremendous job to bring it back.
Yeah. Well, I think I've got to go back and talk to Steve now at 4 o'clock. Yeah.
Elwell Stevens?
Elwell Stevens. Yep. He was a key person, I guess, in the...
Well, he was involved in the construction down there,
yeah.
In a big way.
Yeah.
He was involved with the San Stevens. He's a knowledgeable guy in that. Stevie, because he was with the university before we developed the construction fund. You know how we got the construction fund? It was interesting because if we were building buildings, for instance, the $250 million bond issue was passed in 1957. Now that was to give us a chance to build this great university, which didn't go anywhere. The first building that had to be built was a, and we needed classroom space, but the first building we had to build was a physical education building in Geneseo, because Austin Irwin was chairman of the Senate's Finance Committee.
I remember him. See, I taught at Geneseo.
And we had to build it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, but we had the 1960 master plan. We had to develop a master plan.
Who did that, really?
Well, usually they brought in somebody. Now, I think the master, if I would correct now, I would say that the master plan, 1960 master plan, was worked by Foster Brown. Did you ever know Foster Brown?
Yeah.
Foster Brown was president of, I'd say, Oswego. Mm-hmm. Afterwards became president of St. Lawrence. Huh? He left. Pretty sure Foster was the, he was on one master plan, I think it was that night. But anyway, the master plan was came out and developed. And, you know, we had big ideas and all, it was great. And the committee, and I was on the committee, we met down in the St. Regis Hotel in New York City with Rockefeller, Malcolm Wilson, Louis Lefkowitz, and Arthur Levitt, Tom Hamilton, Frank Moore, and myself. Freddie Greenman, I think, at Charlie Garside, I think they were the ones, we were the committee. And they're reading this master plan, and Rockefeller's all enthused about it. It's a great master plan and all. In those days, if you wanted to build a building, you had to go to the Department of Public Works. Yeah. Say, you know, we want this building. Well, that's, yeah, well, all right, yeah, but we have to get this addition on Comstock Prison first. Huh? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they were talking about this master plan, and everybody was all enthused. Tom Hamilton was enthused about it. Rockefeller, you know, he could wax eloquently about something. He was all. And finally I said, you know, I don't want to throw any cold water on this party. But I want to tell you something, Governor. If we want to get this university built, we can no longer stay married to the State Department of Public Works, or we're never going to get this university off the ground. He was quick, see. He said to Frank, what do you think about it? Well, he said, I think Jim has a point. Well, he said, you fellas do something about it. That was a very Rockefeller way. So Frank and I were coming back from Albany, and we had a state car and a chauffeur, and we're driving up, and we had intended to put tuition on. We had been talking about it. We didn't want to do it in 50. I was talking about it, Frank and I were 58, but we weren't getting anywhere. So by 61, we were pretty well set that we had to have it. We didn't want to put it in 60. We didn't want to talk about it in 60 because the governor was running in 60. He had elected in 58. He was running again in 60. And if you talked about it, you'd have had Rockefeller in favor of it, and then the Democratic candidate would have been opposed to it and become a political issue. So we soft-pedaled it until after the election. And that was, to me, was a political decision, not a partisan political decision. It was to keep the thing out of politics. So we were talking about tuition. We kicked around a lot of ideas coming up in the car, and I was in bed about 11 o'clock that night. I get a call from Frank Moore. He did this regularly. Jim, he says, I'm here in the office, and I'm in bed, and I just have this idea, and I want you to think about it. Tell me what you think about it. See? And it was the idea of taking this tuition, getting a $400 tuition, and putting it into an income fund that would pay the bonds on the buildings that you built, and we'd be separated completely. We'd set up our own construction fund to build the buildings and use this money that we could get, and the building, the university could grow as the population grew, which was a great idea. Huh? And, I said, Frank, I think you got something there. So we met the next day and kicked it around and got it fairly well refined and what he wanted. And then We had to have legislation on this.
He went to the governor, and Rockefeller thought it was a great idea, too, and so did Norm Hurd. And he left, I was going to keep it too late. They finally put legislation through. It was going through, it was in the legislature, hadn't it? And I went into the legislature this Monday night, and I was in there on some welfare bill that I was interested in, not in education at all. And all the labor leaders in the state were there. Of course, I was in the plumbing, heating, construction business, and I knew all of them. And then the Senate, I said, what are you guys doing here? We're here to see Walter Mahoney, and we're going to kill them.